does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it
all. Previously on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
Purdue fans, there is no April Fool's joke on this April 1st. Your Boilers are off to Phoenix for the Final Four. Good Monday morning to you. I am Kevin Bowen. He is Andy Sweeney. Corbin Lingenfelter, outstanding there on the show open. Shout out to, obviously, plenty of CBS audio. And for as well as Zach Edey played yesterday, Andy Sweeney, Rob Blackman, I think, was just as good.
What a call by Blackman.
On that final call, courtesy of the Learfield Purdue Global Radio Network. Bobby Riddell, of course, capping it. Absolutely beautiful. Corbin, thank you one more time for that open. We'll play that coming out every hour. They have gotten there, Andy, and a lot of Purdue fans, certainly if you're under the age of, what, 40-something, you have not seen that. What a game. What an individual performance. What a post-game. I thought the scenes post-game, big reason why I love sports so much. Pretty incredible, pretty impressive to have the humiliation they did a year ago and now to be back there. And we'll get it started Saturday night with the Big Men Final Four coming up out in Phoenix.
Corbin, that was a great job, man. And what a fantastic call by Blackman. I mean, we'll talk with him coming up at 9 o'clock today. But a good morning to you, KB. And I tell you what, you know, I mean, in sports, you have some cities and you have some teams and you have all these, different happenings. And you can tell it means a lot to the guys. But some teams are just always there. And I'm not picking on, for instance, the Kansas City Chiefs or anybody like that. But they've been there. They've been there. And they've been there. And, I thought what you saw last night from the Purdue community, and that's what it was. It wasn't just the players. We'll play some of this sound as we go. But, you know, Matt Painter, hugging Robbie Hummel. Hummel's doing
the call for
Westwood One, and Robbie Hummel is crying, and the other, you know, the fans and the former players, and obviously Coach Katie and everybody else. And Purdue got it done this weekend, and I think what you mentioned is spot on. We went into this tournament with Purdue and Matt Painter having by far the most pressure on them. Did we not? We went in. Now you could say, well, you know, Kentucky had been down for 3 or 4 years and Cal had some pressure and there are some other teams, you know, are guys going to be able to make a run so they saved their job and everything else. But Matt Painter and this team had the pressure of the basketball world on them for an entire year. They said the right things. They bent the knee. They said, listen, we lost to a 16 last year. And KB, they bounced back this year. We saw what they did the opening weekend, discarding Gonzaga in the second half. You knew Tennessee was going to be tough. I mean, you knew Tennessee, and Dalton Connect was fantastic. But Purdue and what they did, congratulations to them. Congratulations to their fans. And now it's all about Phoenix, baby. Good for them.
You know, again, what I love about sports, Andy, all of it can be seen the moment Fletcher Lawyer threw that ball up in the air at the final buzzer. Zach Edey has come off that bus looking like Tarzan for several weeks right now, and he has not sniffed playing like, you know who. He has played like Tarzan, and he certainly did yesterday. But just that scene, that moment, and the hug of Matt Painter, Robbie Hummel's emotion leading to rare emotion from Matt Painter. Matt Painter saying afterwards, I don't usually climb the ladder. I don't usually go up there to snip down the nets when they've done it for their respective Big Ten championships. But he went up there. Obviously, the scene with Zach Edey and Gene Cady. Just all of it. It is, to me, why I love sports so much. There was a great moment in the first half where CBS did a great job of laying out and let the Let's Go Boilers chant inside a Little Caesars Arena build, different camera angles to it. That is exactly what I just eat up about, you know, everything that sports can stand for. And, you know, obviously if you're a fan of the team down in Bloomington, there's a level of hatred that you probably have towards Purdue. That's fine. That's what a rivalry is all about. But somewhere in that hatred, there is respect. and or jealousy or both. I think it's everything.
You can describe it however you want to. Oh, I'd be jealous of Purdue.
But the amount no of doubt. Respect and jealousy that's there just has to have some sort of ounce in you, no matter who you are a fan of or where your rooting interest is. What a game from arguably the two best players in college basketball yesterday. Dalton Knecht is a tremendous talent. And boy, Zach Edey, you know, I ask frequently Purdue guest Andy that we have on, what do you think is the best trait Zach Edey possesses? And, you know, in the biggest moment of his young career, he plays 39 minutes and 20-some seconds. The dude's 7'4", 300 pounds. He's out there for nearly 40 minutes. He delivers for you, obviously, with 40 points. And then, you know, after he has a bit of a humiliating moment himself on the foul line and missing two shots and airballing one, he comes back. And you want to see, like, picture-perfect defense and not committing a foul and blocking that shot to ice it. He did exactly that. What a moment for him. What a moment for Purdue. Lance Jones with that dagger. You heard that a part of the highlight reel. And they will be the early game Saturday. DJ Burns and company awaits. It will be NC State since 1983 for the Wolfpack. Nine straight must-have games for them. Purdue, NC State, 609. UConn against one of the craziest teams you'll find in Alabama will be the second game. And obviously, I think I speak for a lot of people. Entertainment, Hollywood-wise, give us UConn-Purdue
a
week from tonight.
We're going to get UConn-Purdue. Doesn't it feel that way? I know Purdue fans will say, Sweeney, let's just enjoy this one before we start making
predictions. We will focus on that today, but still.
And everything else. But, I mean, if nothing else, Purdue is obviously the story that we'll focus on here. They're a fantastic story. You know, NC State was tied with Louisville with 5 minutes to go on the day of death on a Tuesday in the ACC tournament, and then they needed a banked-in three.
From the left wing
in the semifinals against Virginia just to force overtime, and then they had to win in overtime. They've had to walk through North Carolina, who won the ACC. They've had to beat Duke twice on a neutral floor to get here. And then you mentioned the other side, Alabama. I know a lot's been put out there. You know, Nate Oates, 11 years ago, was coaching girls basketball in high school, and he was a teacher, and he was fundraising, selling a Three Musketeer bars, and now he's in the Final Four, Alabama becoming a basketball school, and then UConn is trying to be the best, and then little old UConn trying to be the best team ever and having a two-year run that's just ridiculous.
This run by UConn, to me, is the greatest run in modern college basketball. I don't think there's really any debate about it. Duke, obviously, 90, 91, 92, right there, would be the only other one you could throw in there. But to me, it's the roster turnover with UConn as well. I mean, 30-0 run? Blinked.
Again, what was that game? It was 23-23, and then it was 53-23.
And the stats with Donovan Klingon on the floor versus off the floor, that will obviously be a huge storyline. Going back to Purdue yesterday, yeah, I tweeted out at halftime, Andy, that was the first real crisis oblique moment of the tournament for them. They're down 32-21.
Yep, down 11.
Matt Painter takes a timeout. I don't think he had taken really any timeouts like that throughout the tournament up to that point. How do you respond? And they respond emphatically right after that with Edey and Lawyer doing, you know, pretty much all the heavy lifting. And, you know, I think if you look back on Friday night even, or you look to yesterday, Andy, you know, Friday night, they got to the foul line 10 times the entire game. All this talk about Purdue and the whistle they get, this and that, they shot a season low in free throw attempts, and they still beat Gonzaga by 12. And then yesterday, the best three-point shooting team in all of college basketball, I think they've risen to the top, they're 3 of 15 from behind the arc, and yet they still are able to get it done. This is something we've seen since Maui. Winning in different ways, where it's not just, oh, we're living at the foul line and we're shooting 40% from three. Obviously, Edey, historic performance yesterday, but it's the other ways. I mean, if you go back to Friday, I thought it was the others early on. Edey had a very pedestrian first half for him against Gonzaga, but it was Braden Smith. It was Lance Jones. Mason Gillis hit a couple shots. And then again, yesterday, I thought we saw some championship resolve from them. We hadn't seen them in those moments yet. You know, Gonzaga, it was still just kind of back and forth. You're down 11. You get down again there. Final, 8 minutes to go. I think Painter had to take another timeout. Their response really stood out to me.
Yeah, I never felt like, you know, they're down 11. For some reason, I was never, you're right about championship medal. I just was never too worried about Purdue. And I don't know if that's because, and listen, I can understand if you're a Purdue fan watching that, you don't want to be down 11. Dalton Connect is kind of getting whatever he wanted. But I didn't feel like Tennessee, the other players were hitting on all cylinders. And I think it goes back to, you know, something that Lapis said on the broadcast. I'm trying to remember if this was yesterday or if this was going all the way back to Friday. But Purdue can play whatever style you want to play. When they get up and down and they're running and Braden Smith is finding Lawyer or Jones and they're able to run the floor, they are a deadly basketball team. And then also when they slow it down, and you knew Tennessee was going to focus on the half court, when it got into a half court game, you know, Purdue was crisp. They were running exactly what they wanted to run, and that is what makes them so great. If you take them out of something, they can go to something else. But we don't need to put Edie too far on the back burner. What he did yesterday, and what he's done all season, I'm going back, and I need to, you know, go back through the game logs. The dude doesn't have a bad game. It's unbelievable. The guy doesn't have an 8.6 rebound performance that's out there.
Again, he was relatively quiet Friday night, and what was the stat line Friday?
It's 20-something, 15. Exactly. It is what it is. And then, you know, there was a sense of you knew with them not shooting threes. And by the way, you know, it's not like everybody else was getting to the free throw line either, right? They needed ways to score. And Zach Edey, again, it's stuff, and I think I tweeted this out, what he has done at Purdue and what he has done in this run and this season and what he did yesterday and the scowl on his face, if you will. In fact, Corbin, let's get that sound ready. This is Edey after the game to CBS. This is legit. What he is doing is basketball lore type stuff. When people go back and they look at players who played great in the Final Four, the NCAA tournament, Zach Edey is at the top of the list. Here's Edey yesterday, last night with CBS right after the game.
Unbelievable performance by this team, but by you specifically. What was your mentality in this game?
They thought they knew us, man. They thought they knew what we had in our hearts. I promise you they didn't. We're winners. This is what we do.
You came back for this opportunity. What's going through your mind right now as you advance to the Final Four?
We still got two more games, but man, I couldn't ask for a better team to spend it with.
Go enjoy it.
Thank you.
40-16, 27-14, 23-14, 30-21. That's the four-game run to get to Phoenix.
Yeah, it's
unbelievable.
It's statue-type stuff. I mean, it's outside of Mackey type of stuff. You know, that question there by Evan Washburn and like, okay, you came back for this. I think we're reminded, like, Edey did not come back thinking all of a sudden, oh, I'm going to rise my draft stock or this is, you know, I'm going to show people I got a left hand or, you know, whatever. Sometimes people do come back to college from an NBA draft standpoint. It was come back to school for legacy.
For this, yeah.
And that's a lot of pressure. And like, again, I'll go back to the Tarzan comment that I made earlier. Like, Zach Edey gets off the bus first, but he plays like he gets off the bus first. Like, he then backs it up. I mean, those post-game comments, obviously, again, it's the raw emotion coming out, but you just watch his play for 39 minutes in 27 seconds. He played yesterday. The dude's on the floor for at least three jump balls. I mean, 7'4", 300 pounds.
It's unbelievable.
And he's diving on the floor.
I mean, he's unbelievable.
And again, both ends of it. When he had his lowest moment yesterday after that air ball, he gets back and just perfect defense on Dalton Connect for that game-sealing block. I do want to mention, I know he had 0 points yesterday. I thought Mason Gillis had some really important rebounds and three assists as well. Just continues to be a glue guy for them. I thought Fletcher Lawyer at times had a couple big shots when Purdue needed it. I think he had the first bucket, if I'm not mistaken, once that lead grew to 11, just to kind of weather the storm a little bit as well. And Braden Smith, per usual, stuff in the stat sheet. Purdue is off to the Final Four. Shout out to Grant. He fired this tweet at me this morning, Andy. He goes back to November 1st, 2023, okay?
Okay, November 1st, 2023.
He tweets at me, all in on the Boilers making the Final Four, plan my bachelor party for the first weekend in April.
Oh, goodness.
In Phoenix, wishing it into existence.
Good for you, Grant.
I responded to Grant, I love this, hashtag believe, and he responds this morning, it was wished into existence. He says, if you and Andy need a place for a Friday remote, we got a spot for you by the pool.
I'm sure, man.
At the Airbnb. Grant, I've done a bachelor party in Scottsdale, Phoenix. I don't think I can do another, but Godspeed to you and the rest of Boiler Nation.
Yeah, I got
heading out there.
I got a couple buddies who are going who are Purdue fans. I got one who's playing the dangerous game. He can't leave until, I think Eastern time. It's like the first flight out there. So, I mean, he's going to be on the
Saturday morning.
Saturday morning. Oof. So he's playing with fire, but it's the only thing he could do. And he booked it, both of them independently, booked flights back like Grant did in November. Something ridiculous like that, you know, wishing it into existence. But listen, I just think, you know, Purdue has shown all year that they can win different ways. And you saw it. They have shown all year that they can fight through some adversity. They showed it, especially yesterday. And Zach Edey has been an alien all year, and you saw it yesterday. So congratulations to them. I really feel as well, something I want to dive into. You know, there's a lot of negativity attached to college sports, college basketball coaches at times, and, you know, whether it be the portal or it be coaches, you know, picking up and leaving, whether that be during the season or right after the season, not playing out the postseason. You know, Matt Painter, I know Greg Doyle even tweeted this out yesterday. You know, Matt Painter, it feels like the basketball community really loves Matt Painter. And so Matt Painter making a Final Four, I think, resonates with a lot of people, does it not?
It's one for the good guys. I mean, it's...
It does, you know, I mean, it does feel that way.
Cheaters don't always win. I guess that's what I'm reminded of when I see Purdue in the Final Four here. And again, how do you not... And this is probably a topic for later in the week, Andy, but you have to have a ton of respect for it. It's... The player development, I believe of all the Power 5 schools, they've had the least amount of transfer outs.
Oh, sure.
In the last X amount of years. It is an in-house roster development, and they sprinkle a little garnish on it when they need to, i.e. Lance Jones and that dagger yesterday. But it is pretty special to watch, and cannot wait for Saturday night again. It'll be Purdue and NC State to lead things off, 9.5-point favorite. UConn and Bama, that is at 11.5. Pretty rare to see, honestly, favorites at that
high. 11.5 is a lot of points.
In the Final Four.
It's probably warranted with the way that UConn has played. All right, what did Matt Painter, what did Zach Edey say after last night's game? Plus, you'll hear that. We'll give you some scores on the checkdown. It's a Reaction Monday, hanging out with you, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
As well, and the man that certainly painted a beautiful picture for all of Purdue Nation out there yesterday and has done it all year long. He is Rob Blackman, the voice of the Boilers. Rob, I could listen to the call all day long. Congratulations, beautiful words, and start packing for Phoenix, sir.
Yeah, and thank you to Corbin. That one caught me off guard there. It gave me some chills again this morning. So thank you, Corbin, and thank you guys for putting that together. But what a day. I have to tell you, Kevin, there were so many different ranges of emotions there going through, not obviously just me, but I think lifelong Purdue fans from those last two or three minutes, knowing that you kind of felt like you were in good shape. I think when Lance Jones hit that three, you could feel a little emphasis on little more comfortable that you were going to get it, but you weren't 100% certain until that three missed by Ziegler there at the end, and Tennessee chose not to foul. So Thanks again for mashing that up. That was really cool to hear.
Well, most importantly, thank you for that call. I do want to nerd out over that for just a second, if you don't mind. When did it come into your brain of those would be the magical words you would use to send Purdue to the Final Four?
Yeah, so I started thinking about it Saturday night. Now, those were not the exact words I was thinking of. I did tell myself, though, that if I had the opportunity, I wanted to somehow tie it into the fact that it was Easter Sunday, just because there was so much irony in that, that of all things, for Purdue to play for a chance to get to the Final Four would be on Easter Sunday. So if you really want the backstory, and it sounds like you do, I knew I wanted it to somehow have a tie into Easter Sunday. But to also be very honest with you guys, I didn't want it to also come across as disrespectful because I'm a Christian myself, and I know that the holiest of all Christian holidays is Easter Sunday. So I wanted to kind of walk a fine line there. And that just towards the end of the game, I started thinking about maybe what I should say just in case Purdue indeed pulled this off. And that was something that popped into my mind. I don't want to be a Sunday school teacher here, which I was, by the way, when my kids were small. But basically that's the story of Doubting Thomas. And many of your listeners probably already know the parable. But, yeah, seeing is believing is what it comes down to, because Thomas did not believe that Jesus had risen from the dead until he saw him with his own two eyes. So that's where that one came from.
Rob Blackman with us, voice of the Boilers. Well, you nailed it, Rob. I mean, I don't mind saying
it. That was a grand slam.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it, and the broadcast was great, and your final call there will live for generations with, in the state of Indiana, Purdue fans, NCAA college basketball fans, and everything else. You know, I want your view. You know, you're there courtside, and you're sitting next to Bobby Buckets. Robbie Hummel's a few seats down, and, you know, the emotion between he and Matt Painter, and then, you know, Greg Doyle wrote the piece in the Star, and just how everyone, it seemed like everyone was crying. The emotion from, this was more than just a basketball team making a run. This was a culture. This was many years of former players. And it was, I think the other C word, it was a community, a Purdue community. And that's sure how it felt, the celebration after that win. So you're focusing on still trying to navigate a broadcast, a postgame show, and everything else. What do you see when you look out and you look to your left and your right and behind you with all the people being, quite frankly, crying, so many people being so affected by this win and this run from this basketball team?
That is a wonderful question, Andy, because this is what happened, and this is true. This is 100% true. The clock winds down. We have secured the win. I look to my left, our audio engineer, Wes Scott, who's been with Purdue Radio for over 20 years. He's crying. I look to my right, Bobby Riddell's crying. I'm starting to tear up, and the first thing I think about is, good Lord, someone's going to have to hold it together here.
Exactly, yeah.
So it better be me. And then when you know it, good Lord, I look down further to my right, which is where Robbie Hummel was seated, just five or six seats down. And I see him crying, and I'm thinking, oh, this might be a tough one to navigate here. But I will pat myself on the back. I was able to compose myself just long enough to at least get us to that first commercial break. But look, the Robbie Hummel story is well told, and I love the fact that he's getting all the attention that he has been getting here in these last few hours. How cool to have him on the radio call for Westwood One. But I would also like to give a huge shout out to my broadcast partner, Bobby Riddell, because most may not know he was on that first, well, not the first Matt Painter team, the first four Matt Painter teams. But the very first one, when Purdue was 9-19 and Purdue won three Big Ten games, Purdue was 3-15 in Bobby Riddell's freshman year. And he made that team as a true walk-on back when there was no such thing as preferred walk-ons. He had to get his ass up and go to those 6 a.m. workouts with every other guy on campus that thought they were good enough to make it, and he made it. So the fact that he did that, he put in that work, he made that team as a true walk-on. He was part of Coach Paint's first team that only won 9 games, and now he gets to be a part of the broadcast team when Coach Painter's finally has his breakthrough moment and goes to the Final Four. I was as happy for Bobby Riddell as anyone in that building.
Rob, I said to Andy earlier, the scenes post game, frankly, is why I love sports. I mean, all of it. You know, Zach Edey picking up Matt Painter. I did not have that on the bingo card when the final buzzer sounded. I'm curious, though, game-wise, you know, in 10, 15 years, and, you know, hopefully you'll have one a week from Monday, a week from tonight, that will reign, you know, higher than that. But, like, what will be, you think, your big memories from the game itself? You brought up the Lance Jones dagger, the Zach block. I thought the championship resolved down 11 in the first half, really the first kind of crisis moment of the tournament for Purdue. In the 40 minutes of basketball, what do you think will be your big takeaways?
I think, and that's a tough one to answer, because I don't know 10 years from now what I might be thinking, but my gut tells me the fact that the best three-point shooting team in the country was 3 of 15 from 3 and still won the game. I mean, that to me, when when that game was over, I was in such euphoria, and we were so hectic trying to get players and coaches on for post-game interviews courtside. I never, ever looked at the stat sheet at the end of the game. I knew we were poor shooting down the stretch because, obviously, I'd looked at it at the under four timeout. But I never looked at it again until about midnight last night, and it just dawned on me that, good Lord, we were 3 of 15 from 3. We're the best three-point shooting team in the country and still won the game against what I would consider the best defensive team, or second best, maybe Houston, in all of the nation. So I don't know that there was one play, one shot, one rebound, probably that. The other one that would be, if that's 1A, 1B, 1B would be the fact that Zach Edey had 40 points. I mean, are you kidding me? 40 points in a regional final game, his career high. I saw Carson Edwards do that a couple of times, live and in person, a couple of 40 pieces in NCAA tournament games, including a regional final. But to play like Zach played yesterday, I can't imagine I'll ever forget about that.
Rob Blackman with us, voice of the Boilers, here on the Payless Liquors Hotline on the Fan on this Reaction Monday. Rob, you mentioned Zach Edey. I can't believe we've been nerding out over your radio call that we haven't talked about Zach Edey. 40 points in the win and just, you know, completely dominant. What he's been, not only this year, the last couple years, what he's meant to the program, but also his dominance. And boy, Purdue needed his dominance yesterday, and they got it last night. Was there a moment during the game where you're like, we're used to seeing Zach go, you know, 25 and 15. We see that seemingly every single night, but when you, I don't know, maybe you and Bobby Buckets look at each other, it's like, okay, we're seeing something a little bit different. He goes for 40, and boy, Rob, that's something that's going to live in college basketball lore forever, his performance last night.
Yeah, not only does he go for 40, but outside of the Lance Jones three, I can't remember any other of our players taking a shot in the last 10 minutes of the game. That wasn't named Zach Edey. Purdue obviously found the mismatch they wanted. Tennessee had to go with their freshman Estrella because of some foul trouble. And by the way, I thought Estrella actually held his own.
Agreed. Yeah, I agree.
I didn't think the moment was too big for him. But look, Zach Edey's too big for anyone in the country. That's just how this works when you're 7'4", 300 pounds. The fact that Purdue kept throwing him the ball, Matt Painter understood that that was where Purdue was going to make its hay if it was going to make any. And, I've heard Coach Painter talk about this before, but when you play teams like a Houston or a Tennessee that can really, really guard you on the perimeter, I mean, long, athletic dudes that can really heat you up, the one way you relieve that pressure is you throw the ball inside. Now, you have to have a guy skilled enough that catches it inside that could do some damage with it, but that's about your only option. And so that's what Purdue did yesterday. Tennessee, as I said earlier, one of the very best in the country on defense. They can really guard the basketball. But the one way you can relieve that pressure is throw that thing inside and let, you know, because Zach Edey more than likely is going to be one-on-one because the perimeter pressure is so pushed out guarding the three-point line that there's a lot of room in there for him to work. So, the beauty of having a Zach Edey is against those really, really good defensive teams that can really guard the perimeter. You can always throw it inside. And obviously Purdue did that a lot. Let me look here. He took 20 some shots. I think he had 21 field goal attempts and 22 free throw attempts. So Purdue threw the ball into him a lot yesterday, especially in the second half.
Yeah, brief scan of it. I think, yeah, outside of that Lance Jones three, of course, that would have been it from the final 9 minutes and guys not named Zach Edey, which, you know, again, not to go back to the Fairleigh Dickinson rabbit hole, but, you know, that was an issue in closing out that game. It was getting away from Zach last season. Again, voice of the Boilers, Rob Blackman. We've certainly enjoyed these Monday conversations with him over the past few weeks, and he is with us as Purdue is off to the Final Four. Rob, not to lead you down this just emotional pathway, but certainly I would assume you had to think of your longtime friend Larry Clisby at some point yesterday. Just any general thoughts on certainly one of the iconic voices that Purdue basketball has ever seen?
Thank you for asking, Kevin. And yes, you are correct. I thought about him. Actually, I thought a lot about him this whole weekend. It is especially Saturday night, Sunday morning, because I knew how close Purdue was. And if you remember, and again, a lot of our fans will remember, Cliz's last broadcast on the network was actually the heartbreaker in 2019 to Virginia in Louisville. So that's how tantalizingly close he got to a Final Four, 0.3 seconds, actually, from a Final Four. So, yes, I was thinking about him a whole bunch without question. And for those who stuck with the network to the very end, my final segment of the postgame show had a little tribute to him, as well as a bunch of others that aren't with us anymore, at least here on Earth. They had to watch that one from above yesterday. But yes, thank you for asking. He was on my mind a bunch and has continued to be on my mind actually this morning.
Rob Blackman with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Rob, I know you mentioned just looking at the box score at midnight, so I don't know how much you've got to even compose yourself to even think about the Final Four, but it's quite the doozy. You have Purdue, and obviously the story that we're talking about here, NC State was going to have to fire their coach, Rob, and they've won 9 straight. They're an 11 seed, and they've made it all the way to the Final Four. We know the dominance of UConn the last couple seasons and what they've done in this NCAA tournament. And then Alabama, you know, Nate Oates 11 years ago was coaching high school girls basketball and now is at the Final Four, and Alabama makes the Final Four for the first time in program history. I know you probably haven't thought too much about it, but NC State is next. And then I guess your general thoughts on this Final Four as a whole.
You know, I have seen NC State play a couple, 3 times on television this year, including that improbable overtime win over Virginia. So I have seen that game. But I'm going to go back to Larry Clisby here, because you just mentioned something that Cliz always talked about. Of all the great things he saw in all of his years of covering college basketball, he always said the greatest feat that he ever saw accomplished was when UConn won 11 straight elimination games to win the national title. He said he'd never seen anything like that and didn't think he would ever see anything like that again. Well, I hope we're not about to see NC State do that.
Right.
Because that means Purdue would be in its path. You think how amazing that UConn run was. 11 straight elimination games to win the national title. And to take that story further, if I have the time, when we played in 2018, Purdue played in Hartford in NCAA tournament action, first and second rounds. And that was 2019. I'm sorry, that was 2019. Yeah, I'm getting my years confused. Anyway, so we're out of there in Connecticut, and the practice facility we used was a Division III school on the outskirts of town, and Jim Calhoun was the head basketball coach and athletic director. So Calhoun had gone from UConn head coach. Now he's coaching D3 basketball, and he's the AD. And so when we arrived at that facility to practice, Cliz made a beeline for Calhoun because he was there to watch practice and say hi and whatever. And Cliz could not stop talking about that run when UConn won 11 in a row. I think he was wearing Coach Calhoun out about that. And I'll never forget the look on Calhoun's face. He was like, boy, you're really impressed with that. And Cliz just carried on and on about it. So now here we are. What a twist of irony. Not only is UConn in the Final Four, but North Carolina State is trying to do exactly what they did a few years ago. So all of that being said, I don't know a lot about North Carolina State. I know their center is a DJ Young, right? Burns.
Yeah.
He's the talk of the toast of the town right now, as well he should be. So Yeah, I haven't thought much about them. Quite frankly, I haven't gotten much sleep yet, guys. So I'll worry about those guys later in the week.
Rob had absolutely love yesterday when I texted you just to confirm our 9 o'clock time amidst everything. It was a simple two-word response from you to me, if you don't mind me sharing to our audience. Sure. Hell yeah, is what Rob Blackman said to me in joining us here at 9 a.m. Rob, there's no way we can ask you for 6 a.m. local time next Monday, but I do indeed hope that you will be a busy man come a week from tonight in what will be a very late one for us here in the Eastern time zone if Purdue indeed makes it to the Final Four. But I mean this in all sincerity. What a magical, magical call from you yesterday. Andy said it well earlier. You know, in that moment, you know, you can fumble, you can whatever. You know, you probably have thought about that for years. And for you to deliver it so well, outstanding from you. So congrats on that. Safe travels to Phoenix. And again, thank you for these Monday conversations.
Kevin, Andy, thank you very much. And let's visit at least sometime next week and put a cap on this season anyway.
Would love it. That
appreciate
is Rob Blackman, voice of the Boilers, right there on the Payless Liquors hotline. That call, man.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
I feel like this is the music Zach Edey's rocking to walking off the bus. Sees that CBS camera, gives the old scowl. He's always locked in on the rim on the free throws. It's very impressive to me. Never deviates
good.
From that.
Do they keep the scowl going once they get to the Final Four? That's what I need to know.
Sure. Yeah.
Does that keep going?
I thought Matt Painter had some great comments yesterday about, like, we should celebrate this for a day. Like, this is, we deserve it. Let's celebrate it. And clearly, the emotion was obvious. Like, they clearly were celebrating it. And then you'll transition, you know, into NC State and obviously trying to play on Monday night. Rob Blackman, voice of the Boilers, going to join us in 25. Certainly plenty of crowd shots you saw from CBS yesterday. We got both the Edey parents, usually just Julia is who we get, but we got both of them. A couple shots of Matt Painter's daughter. I thought her emotion spoke for itself, and Gene Cady in the building as well. The post-game scenes there, Zach Edey clipping his piece of the net and handing it to Gene Cady. Pretty cool. Here was Matt Painter yesterday on obviously the longtime head coach of the Boilers.
He's always included me, and I've always included him. But if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here. So when you're 18 years old and you get recruited by somebody, you don't think 15 years later you're going to be the head coach and take his place, right? So to me, it was really surreal when I coached 1 year in college and they were interested in me. But I know he had a big part of it. I know he had a huge part of it, and I'm, you know, very grateful for that and very grateful for all he's done for me and our players.
Andy, you don't see the old succession plans work out very well. And not that the Matt Painter one was, you know, whatever, a coach in waiting sort of thing. But, you know, look around college basketball. You just don't see legend. I mean, Matt Painter will go down as a legend at Purdue if he's not already. You don't see that happen very often.
No, not very much. Boeheim had it a little bit with Autry there at Syracuse.
Right, but
Bam's,
I mean,
different because he never wanted to leave.
And
no, he would coach
see how
very
that plays
end.
Out. It's just you don't go from, you know, one, you know, whatever, Katie Court to whatever it's going to be for Matt Painter. But by all accounts, that's exactly how it's going. It's just cool to see Gene Cady, you know, obviously still around and certainly still supporting one of his own. Because, again, it wasn't like Matt Painter was always sold on Purdue. He's told the story many times. I mean, he played on the same AAU team as Pat Knight and wanted that IU offer more than anything and never got it and head to West Lafayette, and the rest is history.
Yeah, you know, Matt, I thought Painter after the game, he talked about the baby Boilers coming in there and really setting things straight. If you remember, what was that? That was going back to what, maybe year two into year three for Matt Painter, that he flirted with that Missouri job. Or if nothing else, he leveraged that Missouri job to get more things, to get more stuff, to get, you know, a practice facility and some of the, you know, the money for assistant coaches and some of the things there. You know, Purdue was in, when Matt Painter took over, it had the foundation of, hey, there can be greatness and some really damn good players can come through here. You guys, well, I'm sure a little bit older Purdue fans will remember this, but there needed to be an acceleration of some of the stuff that matters around a basketball program, right? And so when you talk about Matt Painter, I think that's the thing that rings true with me, is to a certain extent, he had to modernize Purdue basketball a little bit. He had to bring up some of the things that were down. He had to bring those up. Now, it's a lot easier now when the Big Ten is what it is, right? When they make the most money, them in the SEC, and they can afford so very much. But, I mean, there was a time going back to, what, 07-ish? Is that when he flirted with Missouri? Was 2007?
For some reason, I thought it was later than that.
Was it late? Was it like 2009? Because I remember, because I actually did a radio show with a buddy who was a Missouri fan. He really wanted Matt Painter really bad at the time. I think it was actually a couple years. I think you're right. It was a couple
like
years.
Like at the end of the baby
boomers,
yeah,
yeah,
I feel like it was.
It was a couple years later. But, you know, there's always with a coach, there's always like those times, you know, the baby boilers, you know, they give you the initial buy-in that raises how you are seen as a program and as Matt Painter. And then, you know, the next step, Purdue modernizes their facilities and gets some of those things that other programs has. And Matt Painter, you know, looks at another job or two and says, no, I'm going to stay here at Purdue. And all these years later, here you are. You're in the Final Four.
Well, I mean, they win what? Seven. I think it's seven games they won in KD's final year. Nine in Painter's first year. I mean, think about that. Purdue basketball wins 7-9 in back-to-back seasons there. And then you get the class of, and I guess shout out to Scott Martin. He was a big part of that class before some injuries obviously hurt his career. But the Scott Martin, Robbie Hummel, you know, Juwan Johnson, Etuan Moore class in a year that, you know, obviously Eric Gordon's recruitment was the decorated one in the state. And, you know, at that point, you know, what Indiana had seemingly with Kelvin Sampson was going on, you know, a nice track there. That quickly was derailed, but that set it up of, you know, all of the, you know, consistency that they had with the baby boilers. And then again, he had that little bit of a rut, certainly, right after that. He had those couple of years where you had, you know, some very middling 500 type seasons. And we talked about this earlier in the show, but his just brutal honesty with us about that was a look in the mirror moment of, I need to change my recruiting and how much he looks into. I've read like he wants recruits to take personality tests. Imagine that. Wait, what? He wants recruits to take personality
What's
tests.
What's on a personality test? What would be on our personality test?
And at the start of every season, he wants his players to take that because he wants to make sure if we're going to hand you a role,
right?
Are you going to say yes to it? And are you going to be willing to stay with it and respect our process of how we want to build things? And then specifically, if you just look back to last year, Andy, to the humiliation of how it ended and go back to North Texas or go back to St. Peter's and him saying to his staff, and I forget who, I think it was a former player. I forget where I read this. Came to a Purdue practice just a few weeks ago and could not believe at how short the practice was late in the season. Like he's looking around like, wait, it's already over? That was it? And the staff was like, yeah, that's been a big thing that Matt has looked at and internally and thought, you know what? How do we get to the point where maybe we're peaking a little bit more in mid-March? Oh, how I've coached for multiple decades.
Right.
And the aggressive nature to practice after practice after practice. Maybe I do need to scale back.
Yeah, let's not peak in January.
Yeah,
right.
And like, again, it's the lack of just checking your, or it is, it's not the lack of it. It's checking your ego at the door. I think too many times people in positions of authority, there's just a level of stubbornness of, this is my blueprint. I'm bringing it to the meeting, and this is the exact thing we've used for decades, and we're not deviating from it. You can have core principles, Andy. You can have the core beliefs. You can have a lot of, okay, this is our foundational rock. But to make sure you're willing to adapt, change with the times a bit, adjust some things, That all takes, I think, a really special leader, and I think Matt Painter is exactly that.
Yeah, no McDonald's All-Americans. Here are his class ranks per 24/7 Sports. In 2020, he had the 37th ranked class. In 2021, 41. In 2022, 30th. And then in 2023, 73rd. And, you know, just the way college basketball is, that's it. To me, that is like speaking French, KB. I mean, that really is. Like, if you just came in here and you started speaking Spanish and I was going to have to do a sports talk radio show with you, that's how I view those rankings. And he does it. Listen, the dude does it his way. I mean, he absolutely does it his way.
Remember the Trey Kaufman-Wren audio we played last week?
Yep.
Like, that answer that he gave after the Utah State game of just, you know, he almost felt honored to even be on the basketball team. I mean, this is a dude that was the Gatorade Player of the Year in the state of Indiana as a junior in high school.
Yeah, he's a top 30
kid. Unless you're
Greg
Oden, no one's doing that in this state in the last couple of decades. I mean, he was, yes, I mean, you know his recruitment well. It was much probably closer to your era than it was in the area of, you know, how heralded he was as a high-end four, maybe even a five-star in some services. And for him to be as accepting of the role as he has, again, goes to show you the recruitment of the personality and the player off the floor is as equal as it is to that on the floor.
Rob Blattman's going to join us top of the hour. I wanted to ask you this, and I'm wondering if there is a nasty group that is still out there, and I'm wondering if it's a bunch of confused fans, and then I'm wondering if there are just a slice of fans that are absolutely giving their flowers to Purdue. But the other team here, how do Indiana fans, KB, experience yesterday, do you think? I mean, besides extreme jealousy, is it anger and jealousy? Because, I mean, let's make no mistake about it. Purdue making the Final Four changes the conversation between Purdue and Indiana fans. Indiana fans have been the hater group because they haven't been very good, and so they can sit on the sideline, and even though Purdue has had these great regular seasons, even though they have a culture that is well-respected, even though they've won, you know, I mentioned the Big Ten, even though they've had success in the Big Ten tournament, they haven't got over the hump, right? And so, you know, I watch this always as, you know, who's the, you know, here, there's not another NFL team. So it's not like, you know, in New York, there's the Jets and Giants and they can snipe, or when you have the Cubs and you have the White Sox, Major League Baseball. But we do have that with the two college basketball teams. And I was watching yesterday, and that's all I could think of, because I was texting my IU buddies, and it ran the gamut. It really did. There were some that were disgusted that Purdue is in the Final Four. There were those that really like Matt Painter and can be adult enough to say, hey, listen, they made the Final Four. They've had this culture, almost kind of like what you said, that they kept having good teams. They keep throwing those darts at the dartboard in the NCAA tournament, and then eventually it happens. And then I have another buddy who's kind of in the middle that's confused, that doesn't know what to think, doesn't want to cheer on Purdue.
I love, by the way. Can I just chime in here? I love hatred. I love the rivalry.
Well, that's what
because
part of
I've
this
got,
is.
You know, I've got IU fans on, friends of IU fans, on various degrees. Mm-hmm. I've got one right now that, you know,
is beside himself.
If somehow
probably.
Zach Edey showed up missing, I'd be like, that's the person we need to find.
I'm the same way. You know, I'm the same way.
There's a small percentage of that, which, again, we love the hatred. We love the rivalry. It is a fan. Fandom is a big part of the word. But then you've got people like this. I was tagged in this tweet from Dan yesterday, who is an admitted IU fan. He goes, IU alums are supposed to hate Purdue. Today I can't. I'm happy for Painter, Edey, and company. It was not difficult to see in the postgame that embrace how happy Edey is to deliver the Final Four to his long-suffering coach. This from Tom. As an IU fan, the range of emotions are all over the place. Jealous, bitter, frustrated among them. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't extremely happy for Matt Painter and his program. He's everything I wish we had at Indiana. That recipe once worked in Bloomington, too.
Yeah, don't you feel that way? That it's a hodgepodge of, if I'm an Indiana fan, I don't know what to. I'm like, I'm angry. I'm not happy. I want to be clear. Like, I'm probably I'm scornful and everything else. But I'm also like, this is what's weird about Purdue. If, okay, so everyone knows, if the Dallas Cowboys won the Super Bowl, I would be mean and vindictive and trying to find ways to make fun of him. I would not be able to take it laying down, okay? I would be that kind of person because I don't respect what they do.
Yeah, it's kind of like
year in, year out.
It's kind of like the Colts of the Patriots.
Exactly. I don't respect what they do. But Purdue has this, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because of their recruiting rankings. You know, maybe Zach Edey with some of the things he says, he gets some of that bad boy. But they don't.
Well, it's because Matt Painter's name never comes up in cheating.
Yeah.
If you want to be totally honest, right?
Probably. Like, they have been able to dodge the, you know, we've made fun of Purdue, but the hatred that is there, and I think that's what's interesting about the IU fan today. I think the word that comes to mind is probably jealousy. And then if I'm an IU fan, I'm angry at my own program. More so than Purdue and company, right? And Matt Painter and what they have built there. I'm mad that, you know, the end of the Tom Crean happened. I'm mad that Archie Miller was an absolute embarrassment to IU. And I'm mad that Mike Woodson hasn't done as much as you were hoping he was able to do. Although, my man Mike Woodson is working the magic. The offseason magic trick always works. You get players, people get excited. But I don't know. I just found that interesting because I'm like, how are IU fans? You got to be really conflicted on you feel good for Matt Painter and company, but you're also not rooting for them. When that's a 1-point game with 3 minutes to go, you're rooting for Dalton Connect to knock down shots, are you not? Most of them.
Amidst all the haystack of hatred that's there. Again, it's a big haystack of hatred, right?
Yes.
That needle of respect is somewhere in there.
It's still in there.
It's not obvious. You got to dig a whole lot. It might take you hours to find it. But there are two needles inside of the whole haystack, right? Two. It's a 1,000-pound haystack. Two needles in there. One says respect on it. The other says jealousy.
It's the last time you've been around a haystack.
Didn't we go to Stuckey's back in the fall, the Bowen family?
That's the pumpkin patch.
Shout out to Stuckey's
Halloween time
for pumpkin patch.